A look at Connecticut high school baseball, softball, and lacrosse. Bats and Sticks on WICC 600 and 95.9. The voice of Connecticut with your host, Dave Rudin.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Bats and Sticks. We are brought to you by Duchess Restaurants. Fresh food, served fast. Have Isabella Gatos in production today. I always forget to thank my producers at the end, so we'll do it at the beginning. We are 1 week into the season, and in the spring, it's a sprint, not a marathon like other parts of the school year. And already we've had a lot of changes, and we're going to talk about them all. We have a really good show for you, and we're going to touch on all the bats and the sticks. We have a couple of ACC-bound athletes, two of the best in the FCAC, going to be joining us. Carson Dodder of the Fairfield Ward baseball team, and Cameron Picorni of the Darien girls lacrosse team, which on Thursday beat the number one team in the country. And we'll also talk a little softball with John Nash, but as always, we start off on the baseball diamond, and joining me, my co-host, Sean Ratchford. Sean, how you doing?
Very well. How about yourself?
I'm okay. A windy day up at Fairfield Ward. I know you experienced a lot of them, but I was up there yesterday, and probably a good place to start just in terms of some general observations. And the one thing that struck me, the Mustangs came away with a 6-0 win. Colin Stoll went 6 shutout innings, only allowed 3 hits, all of them to Jules Cicero, the Wreckers' leadoff batter. But one of the things that struck me, and we'll get to Ward's performance, is how things can change so fast during the baseball season. At 4 o'clock on Friday, Staples was getting ready for their first pitch against Glastonbury, and they were undefeated at 2-0. And by 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, they were going off the field in the 500 mark with a couple of tough losses to good teams. But you know better than me and everybody else, things change so quick during the baseball season.
Yeah, as a baseball coach, you're also a little bit of a weatherman. You look at this week coming up, wow, it's going to be 80 degrees, and yet it's supposed to rain 3 days. So what's that going to do to games? Who's going to pitch if you play 4 or 5 games in a row? The hardest part of the high school season is getting the kids to look at next pitch, look at next game. You want to learn from the game. So I'm Jack and his staff will do a great job of looking at, okay, where do we have our mistakes? Where do we have our holes? And use practice to try to get them away. Because your goal is to get into the CIAC tournament. Your goal is to get into the FCAC tournament. That's what keeps the kids driving forward. The day-to-day goals are what the kids want to have. You as a coach got to get your team ready for games in late May, games in early June.
I know Jack at least talks about it. All the coaches feel this way, and I know Jack verbalizes it a little bit more, how April's kind of like the testing ground, and then you want to be playing the big games in May and June, and April's about setting that up so you don't get too high or too low. Do you find that the kids react differently to quick changes, wins or losses, than the coaches do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because of the internet, because of kids going on Instagram, they're able to, they know more than they knew in the old days. And they can put out, hey, we beat this team, who beat that team, which means that we're better than somebody else. So the kids may live moment to moment. They may have expectations of hitting, 300-400, and now they start the year at 0-10, yet they hit 5 of those 0-10 were line drives. So you as a coach, you have to manage the personality of the individuals. You also have to make sure that you take the temperature of your team as a whole. You're coming out of a gym. You're coming out where you're throwing off a flat ground. You're throwing off a perfect mound that you have inside. Now you're going to a place that the mound may not be that good. There are people there. There are opponents there. There are umpires there. There may be a college or two. There may be 10 colleges there. And so there's a lot of things that you as a coach have to help manage, which unfortunately don't happen until you get out onto the field.
Yeah, look, we're just a week into the season, and there's only one team, New Canaan, that is undefeated, and 8 teams only have 1 loss. That's half the league. What's the difference right now after a week from a coach perspective if you're sitting at, say, 3-1 or if you're sitting at 1-3? Because things, as we said, can change so quickly.
I think you look at pitching. We used, again, as I talked a little about last week, we used a five-game ruler. For five games, this is going to be who plays where. This is going to be our rotation. You look at that, hey, is that working out? Wow, this gentleman is doing a lot better than we thought. We may have to move him up in the batting order. Somebody's struggling, they're pressing, they're trying too hard. We may have to look up, move him down to get him more fastball. So as a coach, again, you look at your number one pitcher. Is my number one pitcher, Dave, is he good enough to beat somebody else's number one? If not, I may have to change my rotation, use him on a close on Wednesday, close on Monday, and bring him to pitch on Friday so that I have three chances of win as opposed to have him go against somebody's number one and, oh, we're good enough to tie, we're just good enough to lose, and that's not a formula for success.
We're looking at Fairfield Ward yesterday. And again, last week we're talking about how they had that tough loss against Lyman Hall, and the tone is, you know, we're down after one game, and now all of a sudden they're 3-1, and I think they outscored their opponents by something like, I wrote it in my story, 21-2 margin, and you just look at what the outlook is and talking about them now, and, you know, with Stoll going a strong six innings, and you look at, we know they're going to hit the ball, and they did. You know, Ward's always tough. They're going to be it to the end, and it also just shows how, again, how a week changes everything.
Absolutely. And, again, I watched two games this week, FCAC teams. I saw Wilton play, and I saw West Hill play. And the difference as the season goes along is instead of your pitcher going, you hope to get him 60-70. Now you're going to stretch him out. Now you're going to see kids going 80, maybe 90, and you may even have some kids that go the 100-plus pitches, and that's a huge difference. So at the beginning, you're dealing with probably knowing you're going to have to pitch two or three kids, to now all of a sudden this Dave Rudin kid throws a seven-game one-hitter, a seven-game one-run game, and now you're in a good place for the next game.
I don't know how closely with everything you're doing, you've been able to follow what's happening. You look at the teams right now that are up there, and they're all pretty much teams that we expected. Ludlow, New Canaan, Fairfield Ward, Norwalk, all teams that we talked about. And you even have a few surprises right now. Wilton's 3-1, and they have to be feeling good with a new coach and getting off to a good start. West Hill's 2-1. What's it like in the years where no one's really talking about you too much and you're not maybe certain, or at least from the media standpoint, we're not really certain what certain teams have? And go ahead.
Those are the best years, Dave, because you can fly under the radar for a while. It doesn't last long, but you can use that with your team to talk about, we don't get any respect, we don't do any of this. So you can use the underdog card to try to get them to really focus in on practice, because again, baseball is a hard sport. You don't want to go in crazy emotional, because your first at bat or your first play, if you make a mistake, you're going to be done. But you use that to drive them to say, hey, we want to sneak up on teams, we want to show them that we're as good as anybody. So I personally love that role. I think it's harder sometimes to be on top and then have to live up to the expectations, but that's a role that we had at Danbury, more not so than not.
What about your pitching staff and how you handle that? You just talked about, first of all, you're dealing with cold weather, so you're managing pitch counts. You're always managing pitch counts regardless of the weather the whole year, and particularly early in the season. And if you're coming up on this week where the forecast is a little bit questionable, does that alter how you're going to handle your pitching staff? Will you move some starts around to different people, or does that get hard to do because forecasts aren't 100% foolproof?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. You just hit it on the head. Do I move a pitcher, a day so he matches up this week. But, oh, my God, next week that doesn't do us any good. So the hardest part, as Jack talked about last week, develop pitchers, develop pitchers, develop pitchers. You got to have kids that you can go to that are going to go in and throw strikes. The biggest thing I've seen in every game, there comes a point where a pitcher walks out there and he brings in a pitcher, and next you know, in that inning, there are three or four guys that he has to bring into the game that just unfortunately are not throwing strikes. And now you go from a game that's tied to a game that you get left on the field. So it's a really, really hard thing. It was the hardest thing for me to learn. Charlie Pike from Stanford did a great job. He taught me an incredible lesson when I was a young coach about pitching. You know, he left somebody in pitching, and we were beating him up pretty good. And I asked him after the game, I said, "Coach, I'm a young coach. I said, can you explain to me why you left him out there?" He goes, "I'll show you." So we played him in the first round of the FCAC, and that young man came back and beat us 1-0. He goes, "Now do you understand? He had to learn how to compete. He had to learn how to battle." I said, "Charlie, thank you. You taught me a great lesson."
Do you try to sometimes match up who you're pitching against who you're playing? If, say, you have a team where you have a three-person starting staff and there is a definite defined ace, a definite number two, a definite number three, but you see that one of the better teams that you're going to be facing, you're scheduled to have your number three going, will you mix things up a little bit to try to get your best pitchers against the best teams?
It depends on who you're playing. Every season is different, and in the FCAC, if you assume somebody's not as good as maybe the press clippings are, you can get bitten in the backside by that. Have I done it? Absolutely. Has it worked? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. I think kids like routines, so if you can get them in the pattern that, Dave, you're the Monday guy, Sean, you're the Wednesday guy, Jack, you're the Friday guy, you know, and somebody's always going to come in to close, we're always bringing somebody in to close, I think that helps the kids. And then they also, they know the roles. You have your middle guys. Are there games that get away from you? Yes. Both being ahead and behind. Being ahead is nice because now you can start to try some kids that you think have potential to see if they really do have potential.
We're going to be talking shortly with Carson Dodder. You and I just talked a little while ago getting ready for the show, and what's fascinating to me is baseball in Fairfield. Right now, Ludlow's 3-1 and Warder's 3-1. And you just think about all that talent that's spread out onto two teams and being able to stockpile two teams that could be contenders for championships. And I don't know. I mean, could you imagine if you were the coach and you only had one school with all that talent? You'd have a lot of parents calling you up wanting to know why their kids aren't playing.
Unfortunately, I've been in the league long enough to have coached when Fairfield downsized and went to one high school. And with Anthony, Fairfield was always one of the best teams and actually won a state championship. I think that was in the 90s.
Yeah.
So it does happen. You also you got Fairfield Prep in the mix too. Imagine if all the kids that were in Fairfield stayed in Fairfield. So that's a tough one. Same as Trumbull. If you took the St. Joe's kids and the Trumbull kids, wow.
We got Dodder coming on. You had to face him a few years. What stood out to you most about him?
Leader. Leader, leader, leader. He ran the show. He let the kids know that no matter what, they were going to be okay. Last year they came in. I think we had three wins. We go out to a decent lead. And, grit. He just said, "Hey, guys, this is a 7-inning game. It doesn't matter what's happened through game inning 1 through 5. And slowly they chipped away and they got the big hit at the end of the game. So that's the part I like the most, that he's a leader. Baseball's baseball. His skills, he'll go up against great players down there. He's got a former teammate, Roman DiGiacomo, down there that he can talk to about the talent. But the leadership part is, that's an amazing thing to have when you have a young player like that.
And you got Jimmy Dobbs, his teammate right now, who's going to Maryland. You almost fall into the trap there and saying you have three ACC players, only Maryland's not in the ACC anymore. But It's getting kind of cool with all the talent in the FCAC that it's getting to be like lacrosse, where if you're a high school coach, you're getting pictures of your alum going up against each other.
That's really exciting, and it's exciting for you as a coach to get those pictures. It's exciting for the league because it helps the other coaches, it helps the other players aspire to, I want to be that guy. I want to be the next guy to go from the FCAC to the ACC to the Big East, and then I want to go on to play in the pros. So it's really cool. I mean, we're not even talking about Marsicano, who's going on to play at Seton Hall,
yep,
second baseman for Ward. So you got 10 kids on their team, as you and I spoke off the air, that are committed to college. So that tells you they're doing something right. And that's really cool. That's a formula that you want to look at. What are they doing? How are they doing this? And try to emulate it.
Okay, we've been talking about Carson Dodder, and we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to him. You're listening to Bats and Sticks on WICC.
Connecticut high school baseball, softball, and lacrosse lives here on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut, with Bats and Sticks and your host, Dave Rudin.
Okay, we're back, and we've been talking Fairfield Ward baseball and their shortstop, who after four games has got a .538 batting average with four RBIs and five runs. Not a bad start. He's going to be playing for Duke next year, but fortunately Fairfield has him, Ward, for one more year, and that's Carson Dodder. Carson, how you doing?
Good. How are you, Dave? Thanks for having me on here.
Nah, thanks for coming on. Always a pleasure, and kind of an upbeat mood when I last saw you coming off a 6-0 win over Staples yesterday. And other than playing Fairfield Ludlow, with the way that both you and Staples have been up contending for FCAC and state titles, I'm guessing the Wreckers are your biggest rival outside of Ludlow?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've always played Staples a lot, you know, multiple times a year. You know, my sophomore year, we saw them three times. They unfortunately got us in the state semis, but, you know, we played them twice last year as well. I mean, they're always fun to battle, and, you know, we want to get to Trumbull this year. They've had our number for the past couple of years, so I think them, Trumbull, you know, love though, they're big rivals to us, yeah.
We were talking a little bit about how the season changes so quickly. Talk about what you were feeling last Sunday morning coming off a tough loss to Lyman Hall and what you're feeling right now after three real decisive wins.
Yeah, so, I mean, first game of the year, it's a little tough to lose. You always want to get off on the right foot. You know, I basically told the team, like, it's not the end of the world. Like, we have 20 more games ahead of us at the end of the season. One game isn't going to define us, and it's really just a matter of, you know, we're going to go ahead the next day, gather yourselves and have a good practice, get ready for the next week. We picked up a nice win against Norwalk on Monday, came hot against Brookfield on Friday, and, you know, came prepared on Saturday against Staples. So I think really just looking ahead to the season and, you know, it's really just going to be an awesome season.
You got to be happy with the way all parts of your game functioned yesterday. You had Colin Stoll go out and pitch six shutout innings. The defense was fantastic. You got that catch in left field by Jimmy Dobbs. A four-run second inning in which you guys just executed really well, taking advantage of walks, a perfect sacrifice bunt that ended up being an RBI single, and everything really worked for you yesterday.
I mean, yeah. Colin Stoll is just amazing.
Well, Carson?
Okay. Yep.
We lost you for a couple of seconds there.
Sorry, you there?
Yep.
Yeah, I was basically saying that Colin Stoll, you know, he's a backbone to the pitching staff, and I think he's the main leader to them. And for him to come out and throw six scoreless is amazing. And we really just have a key of finding ways to win. You know, we didn't have, you know, obviously like Henry Vincent, he did really well 3-for-3 yesterday, but there's still some pieces to our lineup that are fully in potential right now. And I really think once we get those going, it could really be amazing. And for us to just, you know, Zach Salato with an amazing bunt, with the squeeze down there to score a run, you know, finding ways to just put runs on the board, sacrifice fives all the way around. It's really cool to see when all the pieces around the team just come together, and it's really nice when you get a team win like that.
I know, Sean, you have a few questions.
Yeah, Carson, first of all, congratulations on Duke going to join Roman down there. What part did Roman play in convincing you that Duke was the school you wanted? And can you talk a little bit about the recruiting process for other players that hope to go on and play college baseball? Because you guys have 10 kids going on to play college in the town of Fairfield. You have 6 Division I players. But talk about the process and talk about Roman, please.
Yeah, Roman, he's a really cool guy. You know, I've talked to him a little bit, and with the coaches of what I heard, he's a really locker room oriented guy. He loves being around the team. Whether he could host kids off the field for dinner and stuff like that, you know, he's just a really good kid. He's an older guy now, but, you know, I talked to him a little bit before and obviously now, and he's like, this is a really cool spot. And, you know, going down there, it's hard to decline anything. And the minute I stepped down there, it was super cool for me. The recruiting process is obviously a little funky now with the whole transfer portal and stuff. And, you know, some kids might not be able to get recruited because they want to look at, you know, Division III transfers or JUCO transfers. So really getting the exposure, you know, making have a good physical frame can help a lot. Getting some metrics up before you really get out there, that could really help as well. I'd like to – you know, kind of take part of Roman's role of being like a locker room guy. I've tried to take it here at Ward. I love being around the guys, love being around the team, you know, not just on the field, like off the field. Like, for example, yesterday, like we were together after the game. I think that plays a long way to a big team success. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing that I talked to Dave about earlier that he asked me about you. And I said, leader, leader, leader. And role model through his actions. We had you last year where you came to Danbury. We had not a very good record. You guys were number one or two in the States, and we're out ahead. First time we got you to pop up, we had a kid not throwing very hard. And what I loved is the second time you came up, you made an adjustment. You said, I'm not going to try to pull it. I'm going to middle out the ball. And that allowed your team to relax. Then you made a play at shortstop that was outstanding. And I think that's the thing that's going to carry you at Duke, the fact that you are able to adjust during a game, you're able to lead. Those things are intangibles that coaches love. Is that something that you've developed over time, or is that something that's always been a part of who you are?
Yeah, first of all, thank you. I really appreciate that. And, you know, I always like to say I kind of have like a goldfish mind. I don't like to keep things in memory. You know, baseball, it could be hard mentally, and you're going to have to learn how to deal with failure. And, you know, sometimes you might strike out your first at bat, but, you know, the next time you come around, you got to, you know, flip the switch, that at bat's behind you, and you got to come through, whether it's, you know, getting a hit next at bat or going to make a play in the field. That's kind of been a big key for our team this year is, you know, how can you flush away something bad that's happened and, you know, go impact the team somewhere else, whether you're on the field, whether you're hitting, whether you're on the bench just cheering on the guys. You know, that's a big thing. And, you know, I have to give respect to you. Danbury's always been a very gritty team. And, you know, we walked in there and we were like, man, like that was a good team. You know,
Thank you
guys played us hard. I still remember it. It was like a 10-9 game, bases loaded to blast out. And, you know, it was just a really fun time. But, yeah, I highly appreciate what you said.
Thank you. And fun for you, not so fun for me.
Hey, Carson, as we finish up here, what's really interesting to me is lacrosse is so big in the FCAC right now. And not right now. It's always been really big in the FCAC, as now as much as ever. And Fairfield is just such a – and lacrosse is well played there. But Fairfield is really one of the schools still – Ward and Ludlow are both known, I think, a little bit more still as baseball – a baseball town, Fairfield. And What's it like growing up playing baseball in the town, and how has it maintained that reputation? I mean, you look at you and Ludlow right now, and if you were one school, I don't know how a coach would be able to handle having so much talent that wouldn't get to play much.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of had the best of both worlds. I grew up on the other side of Fairfield, so I got to play with some of the Ludlow kids. And now I'm here playing with the other guys at Ward. And the biggest thing I have to say is the culture from the youth. The youth kids are really just honed in. And, you know, Brett Connor does an amazing job really making an impact on the younger kids. He hosts summer camps for multiple weeks in the summer. He does other camps just during the weeks in the winter and the fall. And I really think it starts off with the youth. You know, Fairfield's a pretty big town, and the lacrosse does the same thing as well. You know, there's just so many highly talented athletes that come out of this town. We all talk about how, you know, if there was one high school, what would it look like? It would be a pretty good team. But yeah, I'd say starting off with the youth and, you know, what the coaches do to bring those kids in and to make an impact on them is just really key here in Fairfield.
Well, it's been a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun to watch. And Carson, you just you've been doing it on the highest level now for your fourth year. And I just want to congratulate you first on Duke. It's just going to be an amazing experience for you, all that you've accomplished so far. And you guys are off to a 3-1 start. So best of luck the rest of the way. And thanks for joining us.
Yep, thank you for having me on here. I highly appreciate all the nice comments. Thank you.
Okay, good that was luck. Carson Dodder. Sean, as you and I finish up here, I mean, the one comment I get more than other is, man, you have great kids. I can't believe how good the kids you have on the air are. And you and I get to see it. You know, part of the great thing about the FCAC is not just the talent of the kids, but the quality of them.
Well, that's an amazing point. And that's what's great about sports. In my classroom, parents are not there. Friends are not there. Grandma and grandparents aren't there. But at a game, you have a lot of people there. And you get to show your character under pressure, especially baseball, where, as Carson said, baseball is a game of failure. The Rudens are not putting a 30 on the refrigerator for everybody to see for the holidays. But if you bat 300 in baseball, your parents are telling everybody. You're talking about going to Duke. You're talking about going here. So I love that you know, the league does have character kids. That talks to me about coaches being teachers who coach the game of baseball, because they want to teach the kids on a human level, but they also want to teach them the heck out of the game of baseball.
Well, Sean, our time goes by real quickly, and I think this is the end of the baseball portion of the show, but you're just the perfect co-host, and I'm lucky. But the listeners more so. I'm so used to saying readers. The listeners more so for your expertise. So thanks a lot, and we'll do this again next week.
Excellent. Looking forward. Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, it's my co-host Sean Ratchford, and we're going to go to, in a little bit, we're going to go softball with John Nash, but coming up next on the other side, Cameron McCorney of the Darien Girls Lacrosse team. You're listening to Bats and Sticks on WICC.
Expert analysis on all things high school baseball, softball, and lacrosse. You're listening to Bats and Sticks with Dave Rudin, live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Okay, we're back, and we're going to go from bats to sticks. And the biggest sports story of a bit busy week happened in Darien on Wednesday night, when the Blue Wave girls lacrosse team took on St. Anthony's, the number one team in the country, which was riding a 51-game winning streak. And in a game that went back and forth and had a lot of hills and valleys, the Blue Wave ended up coming out with a 10-9 win in double overtime. It was quite dramatic. And joining me right now is one of the Blue Wave's leaders, Cameron McCorney. Cam, how you doing?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Got to be pretty high right now with the team coming off that win. And not only that, but you took on Rye yesterday, and you coming off beating the number one team in the country, you could be flat, but you came away with 11-6 win, so a real good week for you.
Yeah, we were super happy about our win against St. Anthony's, but we knew Rye would be another great team to play, and we didn't want to fall behind on this game and just like cruise by after working so hard to win against St. Anthony's. We didn't want to just lose to another team. So Lisa really made sure that we were ready for this game. We prepared for it. We watched film, and we have another big week coming up. We play Wilton, Garden City, and St. Paul's School of Girls, which are big games, and we're going to have to prepare for. So St. Anthony's was a great win, but we have to keep looking forward to the rest of our season.
Well, if Lisa Lindley's listening, your coach right now, she loved that answer. And you never, you with the schedule she makes for you, you never get a break because if you're not playing in FCAC school, you're playing one of the top programs in the region or even the country. What's it like when you rarely get a chance where you can go out there and say, we're going to win today?
Yeah, it's tough. Every game is a challenge. Every team wants to beat us now, especially since we just beat St. Anthony's. We have a target on our back. We're the team that people want to beat, and we have to know that. It's hard to not really catch a break, but we're prepared for this. We're a hardworking team, and we like to take on challenges.
Let's talk about St. Anthony's, which was kind of like a four-act play, and let's go to the first, the fourth act, which was Quinn Chandler's goal in double overtime to win it for you. Came off a really nice feed from Anna Von Kennel. Quinn was running to the net, caught it, and pretty much one-timed it in. What was the feeling like from where you were standing once you saw that ball go in?
I was very relieved. I was very happy when she scored that goal. It was a long game. We were into overtime, and I was exhausted at that point. And it was hilarious because after Quinn scored, she started running away, and we all had to chase after her. Yeah, but I was so happy.
I think she was the only one that was on the high of that goal. Yeah, she made you guys do a little bit more running than you probably wanted to. But let's go through the other three acts right off the bat. And I came into this game not knowing what to expect from you. And Darianne's always going to be strong, and we knew you had a good team. I don't know if we all knew how good, and this was going to be a measuring stick. And right off the bat, in the first 2 minutes, St. Anthony scores goals, wins the first two draws, and scores goals seconds apart, and you're down 2-0. What's the mood like right at that point?
I was nervous at that point. I didn't know how that game was going to go until we started scoring and caught up a lead. But it was definitely scary for a little. I mean, the game was not perfect. We did have a lot of turnovers, a lot of mistakes. But thankfully, the things we did right outweighed that, and we ended up on top.
Okay, you slowly chip away, and you get back to a tie, 3-3. At the end of the first quarter, and then a great second quarter where you guys scored four goals. St. Anthony scores right at the buzzer, but you're going up with the halftime lead. What's the mood when the team's meeting with Lisa?
The mood was at that point when we were up and we knew we had a chance of winning this game, we were like, we are not going to lose this. We all put in that effort, worked extremely hard. And you could see that, like, we were being a gritty team, especially on the ride when we were redefending. We were working really hard on defending them while they were clearing the ball, which I don't think they expected. And we just really wanted to win that game. And I honestly think we wanted it more than them at that point.
You knew St. Anthony was going to make a run. They hadn't won 51 games in a row for nothing. And then they start chipping away, and all of a sudden they score in the final 35 seconds and tie the game up at 9-9. And I'm sitting there thinking, if you lose this game, I don't want to be, you know, around you having to meet with Lisa after. So you go from being down to being really up to 9-9. Are you discouraged, or are you just saying, you know, the game's not over yet?
We were saying the game was not over yet. We knew St. Anthony's would be a skilled enough team to have a comeback and score goals and play good defense. We were expecting that. We weren't like, and we just wanted to keep our determination and grit throughout the whole game, especially in the end when we needed it the most, as St. Anthony's started scoring multiple times in a row.
My biggest takeaway from, and I spoke to Lisa the next day, but my biggest takeaway with all the talent you have there was just the heart and the grit that you all showed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. There was grit all throughout the field. The defense did a great job on the draw. There were big fights for every possession, because every possession mattered during that game, especially in overtime. We needed the ball, and we had to do that by fighting for those 50-50 ground balls.
You're my second ACC guest on the show today. You had a lot of offers. What made you choose Virginia?
I had to make a financially responsible decision for my family, which helped make my decision. I was earlier committed to Penn, which is a great school. I love Penn, but Virginia is also another amazing school that I love. And I just had to think about my family and my future making that decision.
Well, you're certainly going to a great academic school. Any idea what you want to study and any career goals yet, or too early?
I'm hoping to get into business. I'll be trying to apply to the business school once I go to UVA, and hopefully I can get in and get into the finance field.
Well, you got a great career ahead of you, and you've had a great career behind you, and you've got a great presence. So congratulations on all you've accomplished. Congrats on that win. That was something. And I know I'll have somebody, it might be me, at the Wilton game, which will be a big game. So congratulations, and thanks for taking a little bit of time here to talk with me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, that was Cameron Picorni of the Darien Girls Lacrosse team. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go back to bats, and John Nash is going to join me to talk a little softball. You're listening to Bats and Sticks on WICC.
Game recaps, athlete interviews, and everything high school baseball, softball, and lacrosse. It's Bats and Sticks with Dave Rudin, live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Okay, we're back, and we haven't had any softball talk the first two shows here, but we're going to change that right now. Fortunately, I have him as part of my great freelance team, and he also, many of you know, is the force behind the CT Softball blog. He does it all. It's his business, and nobody knows softball in the state better than John Nash, and he's here with me right now. John, how you doing?
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. I guess we'll start with yesterday. You were out at St. Joseph, covered for me the Ridgefield St. Joseph team. The St. Joseph game, Tigers came away with a 7-0 win, and I guess a little bit of an early season surprise is St. Joseph's having a little bit of trouble getting the bats uncorked.
Yeah, the cadets are really, really young. They're starting three freshmen right now, including catcher, third base, and center field, three obviously very important positions. And I think anytime you have an eighth grader jump up to ninth grade and suddenly you're facing the likes of a Caitlin McGrady in Ridgefield's case, or further down in the season, you know, somebody like Vivian Knott from Darien, there's going to be an adjustment period. But, you know, St. Joe's is still St. Joe's. You know, Jeff Babineau is still Jeff Babineau. And, you know, if they end up in the top eight, they're going to be a threat for the FCAC playoffs just the same, because they have such a great pitcher in the Princeton-bound Katie DiZalo, too. So I mean, they might have started slow, but you definitely can't count them out.
No, absolutely not. They'll be a player in this at some point, especially with a top pitcher and young talent that will not be so young in a couple of weeks. You know, talk a little bit about McCrady, Ridgefield. The Tigers, first time ever, got to the state championship game last year. Lost a lot of players in the field, but as you know better than anybody, if you've got a pitcher, you're going to be in the game, and they still have some talent around her.
Oh, absolutely. And she, you know, Caitlin McGrady, a sophomore, celebrated her 200th career strikeout in only her 29th varsity game. So that alone tells you how good they are. Their top four hitters yesterday against St. Joe's and against that really, really good, you know, Caitlin DiZzalo pitcher. I think as I wrote in your story, they were a combined 10 for 15, I believe it was, with I think six of the seven runs scored and all seven of the RBIs, something like that. But those girls can hit, those top four. And again, I think it's, you know, six seniors was a lot to lose, but, you know, Rita Jagardinsky up there is just, you know, an outstanding coach. She knows the FCX. She's coached at the collegiate level. And she's going to have those players ready too. So there are so many teams right now in the FCAC that you look at that could win the whole thing right now. It's going to be an exciting season.
Yeah, that was going to be my next point. This right now looks like it's going to be a wide open race. You know, Trumbull's off to the great start with their 3-1, and Maddie Pippa is on the mound. You've got Vivian Knott at Darien. They're 2-1. New Canaan has Lauren Fico, and they're 1-3, and they've played a really tough non-league schedule, so that record's not going to stay that way. I don't know, and we haven't touched on everybody. I don't know, in your eyes, is there a favorite right now?
I think if there is, it's got to be Darien just because of the left arm of Vivian Knott. You know, she's the Stanford-bound junior. She led the team all the way to last year's FCAC championship game where they lost a 14-inning thriller to St. Joseph's. But anytime you have a pitcher like Vivian who can, you know, throws harder than 65 miles per hour in one game, that pitcher alone has to be the favorite. Darien's just got to find a way to score runs. That was one of their issues last year. And I'm not sure if it's carrying over to this year. When I did see them against, you know, Foreign, which was the defending Class M champs, and they have, at the time, a 29-game win streak. I think they've won two games since then, so they're up over 30 right now. You know, Foreign beat them 4-2, so it's just a question of, you know, will Darien be able to score enough runs to beat another strong pitcher? And that's kind of what we're waiting to see right now.
Another interesting dynamic to me is, right now, the numbers for softball have been tailing off some. Lacrosse probably part of the reason, but I know a lot of coaches have talked to me about how they're struggling right now, that many of them aren't able to put a JV team together. But at the same time, with the players you have, the depth of pitching in the league has been really strong, and the talent you have out there has been really good.
Yeah, the cream has definitely been rising to the top, and a lot of that, especially, you know, with the pitchers, is number one, their commitment to getting better, and also number two, some of the pitching coaches in the state of Connecticut right now, you know, are just so darn good, and they're teaching these kids how to throw so darn well that it's really making a difference. You're seeing a lot of kids statewide, you know, pitchers going off to college, you know, even at the Division I level. And that's going to continue. I think the depth in a lot of programs is the issue, but numbers at the youth softball level are starting to turn around a little bit. You know, a lot of kids are watching ESPN and watching, you know, all the softball that they're producing. You've got the softball coming back to the Olympics, I believe in the Los Angeles years, if I remember correctly. So all of that, I think, is going to spur the numbers to go up a little bit more, and obviously that'll pay off in the future. But right now, yeah, the kids that do love softball are doing the proper things, training to become some really, really good and special players.
The other thing, and we did one story related, and another forthcoming. We got a little bit over 30 seconds left, but I come from, started the Rudin Report after my Stanford Advocate days, and longtime West Hill coach Tom Pia is now at West Hill, and the opening there has been filmed by their former star shortstop Gabby Lacona. And then over at Stanford, you got their former star shortstop Dana Siricchio taking over. So a sort of a comeback for Stanford softball, hopefully. And it's kind of nice seeing these young players come back and give him back.
Yeah, I've been fortunate to see both teams this week. They both played at Staples, and of course, you know, one of my jobs is based out of Westport, so I was able to see both of those games. But what I love in both Gabby's case and Dana's case is they're giving back to the sport that meant so much to them, and to do it at the schools where they were able to rise up like that, I think is super special, and I can't wait to see what they do.
Well, John, I'm sure we'll have you back. Nobody knows softball better. I'll let you know what we're going to cover this week. Thanks for taking a little time here.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
And that's this week's episode of Bats and Sticks. Again, thanks to Carson Dodder, Cam Picorni, and John Nash. We are brought to you by Dutchess Restaurants. Fresh food served fast. Have a good week, everybody.